Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 4th of October, recording at, nearly 10 p.m., and that's British summertime. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. At first, I would say if I had to have two words to describe the environment we have in stock markets right now, what I think will be the main environment for perhaps quite some time, they would be first ranging, as we see for most markets, and indeed a number of them have been ranging up near the higher side of those overall patterns. And a few standouts have actually been pushing further ahead, but the majority of stock markets are locked in trading ranges. Now, the other word that I would use to describe the overall environment that I expect is choppy. And we have certainly seen that over the last few months, and I think we will see it periodically over the next few months and possibly many months. But I'll add quickly that that's far from a disastrous market environment, and I think that's not bad at all. We all love powerful bull markets, and we've enjoyed a bit of that in the last few years, but they run out of steam eventually, or because they become overvalued or overstretched, or in the old cycles when global GDP growth was stronger, then you'd get central banks moving in to tighten monetary conditions and setting markets up for a bear trend. I don't think that is a serious risk for the major markets over the lengthy medium term. Obviously, changing events could alter the situation. Something like genuine spikes in the prices of crude oil, that would be a big problem. But I'm hopeful that we can actually avoid that, and we're doing that so far. Now, why might markets spend more time in here ranging? Well, there are a number of concerns. The first is that we have somewhat high valuations, and the main exception to that would be the resources sector. So that's a good conservative safe haven, particularly some of the big oil shares. Although that's not a PC sector here right now, or at least certainly not in the eyes of the more militant environmentalists. But, you know, at a time when most equities are on generous valuations, I'll put it that way, you've got predominantly single-figure multiples for these oil shares, and I think they're doing well, and a lot of them have attractive dividends as well. I think they may be ranging in a boring fashion for a number of months more, but if you've bought them because they're reasonable valued, certainly undervalued relative to the rest of the market, and because you like the yield, there's certainly no problem with that. So that's one of the factors that markets will have to contend with, the valuations. Another one is the eventual inevitability of the winding down of quantitative easing in the United States, and also somewhat later in other countries as well. But putting that in perspective, the overall outlook in terms of interest rates is really quite favorable. And Fuller Money has always regarded that as by far the most important influence on stock markets. And therefore, I think we have a reasonably benign environment still. And despite some of the concerns that we see, that I think that the low interest rates, positive monetary policies for stock markets will help to underpin equities generally. And I think there's another factor which will cause markets, will enable them to, if we get surprises, I think we might well see a few more surprises to the upside than the downside. That's one reason why I don't really want to be selling anything in my long-term portfolio, at least not yet. I would certainly reconsider that if I'm if I'm underrating the potential for stock markets over the medium term. In other words, if they were to surge higher, I would certainly, given the development, if I saw it, of some clear overextensions on the 200-day moving averages, against the 200-day moving averages, I would consider taking profits for sure. But overall, right now, I'm happy to hold on to what I actually hold. And a factor that could produce a few more of the surprises would certainly be some of the money which I think is coming out of global bond markets and going into equities. Every time I've mentioned this over the last year or so, I've always had someone come along and saying, well, look, bond investors don't do that. They won't go out of bonds and into equities. They might go from long-dated issues to short-dated issues and eventually back again, but they'll stay in the fixed interest sector. And I think that's absolutely correct for the majority of that money. But the bond markets, the amount of capital, I should say, in the bond markets is absolutely enormous. So even if you get just a trickle away from bonds towards equities, and I think we have seen that, and I think we're likely to see more of that over the next many years in all probability, again, that helps to cushion markets to the downside and to push them a little bit higher overall. Now, a lot of people are very concerned about the soft global economy, and I say that's right in line with what one ought to be expecting following a major credit crisis recession and all the deleveraging that inevitably involves. That's not going to be a strong environment for the global economy. How could it? But we don't want to confuse the global economy with the performance of the stock market, particularly in terms of the global autonomies. And of course, those are the big multinational sector leaders. And those remain very much my favorites for long-term investment, and the sector has to be managed. One can take, I'll put it this way. I think that one can take a buy and hold approach with those autonomies, particularly if you enter when valuations are quite reasonable, and particularly or perhaps even more importantly, if you are consoled with a attractive yield. But as a rule of thumb, and I think I demonstrated this approach when I was writing about Unilever on Wednesday, if you look at those autonomies on weekly charts, and as I'm sure most of you do, and if you have something that's in an uptrend and it has a fashionable moment or the market is a little bit euphoric, the overall market, then you can see prices surge up above those rising 200-day moving averages, and it's a pretty good bet that they will then revert back to the mean in the not too distant future. And so you know at least when to hold off and perhaps to lighten positions. If you get big accelerations up above those 200 rising 200 day MAs, then I think one wants to be for people who are happy to manage their portfolios on a sort of a medium to longer term basis, then that may well be an appropriate time to scale back in those shares and look to pick them up again if you're happy with the companies when they have seen some mean reversion to those MAs. And that's a policy and tactic that I think will be useful for a long time. Now, the MAs can also be useful when we get bearish cycles, because if you look through the indices and autonomies, again on a weekly chart with those 200-day moving averages, and I use the 200-day really because Fuller Money uses the 200-day, Owen's every bit as much involved in this as I am, and because I think that's a good medium term, and I would emphasize lengthy medium term in that. So over the next many months, in a year or two, that it's a good guide in terms of what an acceptable trend upwards or downwards can actually maintain. But you'll notice that the best buying opportunities occur when we've had, for whatever reason, a reasonably significant sell-off, and we have seen accelerations well below those declining MAs. Those, too, are followed by reversions to the mean or more. And it's a very simple approach. There's nothing theoretical about it. It's a logical approach, and when I say simple approach, I certainly do not mean that it is a simplistic approach. Now, excuse me, what can we say about other asset classes in here right now? In terms of long-dated government bonds, we've seen yields come down a bit, and I wouldn't be surprised if they range sideways for a while and then begin to push back upwards somewhat. I know that central banks are anxious to keep those long-dated government bond yields from rising too much for obvious economic reasons, and they'll probably have some success in that overall. But something I've been saying for the last 6 months or so at least, that the surprises of over the not only the medium term but over the very lengthy term now are going to be on the upside more often than not for these long-dated government bond yields. Now, I'm not being alarmist in that, I hope, or I hope that comment doesn't alarm you. We'll see more ranging than anything else, I think, overall. But the fact is that that 31-year bear market, that 31-year bull market for bonds, which pushed those yields to record low levels with the help of late in the stage of the quantitative easing that we've seen over the last few years, that bull market for long-dated government bonds is well and truly over. And I don't expect to see that come back anytime soon. In contrast with global stock markets, while I'm looking for a lot of ranging activity, I do feel that that is a build-up for the next super cycle bull market, which I have talked about a lot. That usually follows lengthy periods of sideways ranging following various economic problems, and it also coincides with the deleveraging that I mentioned a little earlier. It also helps to pull valuations down somewhat, and then create the conditions for a super cycle to the upside. And I won't review all my points on that in this audio because it'll take too long. But I think that that's something that we have a good chance of seeing over the next next couple of decades. And a super cycle bull trend doesn't mean that it goes up all the time. It does get punctuated by at least some cyclical bearish moves, but it is a very, very attractive overall environment for equity investors, and I think that's what we will be heading towards, but not here in the short to medium term. But back to these long-dated government bonds, I think that the big long-term trend is likely to be, for yields, is likely to be sideways ranging to higher more often than not. I don't think that we will see, I'm hopeful that we won't see yields surging too much higher overall. If we were to see another move such as we did from, when did it actually start? Now, my memory is failing me, but if I take a look at US GG10, that's the US 10-year treasury, and that move that started in May, really, we'd been ranging for months and months, and then in May of this year, we saw yields just take off from about the 1.6% level on that U.S. 10-year yield. It got all the way up to 3, so it nearly doubled, and currently trading now at 2.64. So I think it's more likely to range sideways to somewhat higher from here, but another big move, as I say, that near doubling, I don't expect that to happen, but that would clearly be a problem if it did occur. One of the reasons why I don't expect it to actually happen is that I think that we will see a continued mixed, patchy global economic recovery, rather than a huge dramatic improvement overall. I think when we're likely to see yields at their highest, that will be when, in all probability, global GDP growth is really quite strong across the boards. But I don't think we're going to, emphasize, we're not going to see that type of environment really for quite a long time overall. Now, looking at other asset classes, a lot of interest in precious metals still, despite the big, what I suspect is a cyclical rather than secular correction overall within the sector. And a lot of people have been asking, particularly, I see this discussed on financial programs and in the press, why aren't precious metals doing a little bit better here right now? After all, there's been all this uncertainty, such as the U.S. Partial shutdown of the government and the debt ceiling ahead, tension in the Middle East, and so on. Well, I think first, bullish sentiment in precious metals has obviously been damaged. That's one factor. Another one is that, which I've mentioned before, Goldman Sachs, and I'm certainly not trying to demonize them, but what they've done is put out a major comment, bearish comment, in terms of their outlook for the precious metals. And so investors are understandably wary. I am too, with that background. And we've also seen some really quite choppy activity in the precious metals overall, and I think that has made investors a little bit more cautious as well, and understandably so. But my feeling is that If you take gold's price at $1,310 here today, nearly $1,311, if we take silver, $2,175, I feel that these are much closer to important support levels now than they are to really significant ceilings that would persist for a long time. I have to be careful in saying that in the sense that in making myself clear. And if you look at the price chart, you'll say, well, these are still in downward trends. Yes, they are. And therefore, you can see overhead resistance levels. And in terms of support, that is not yet decisively clear, and it never is until you get a good rally up off those support levels. But what I feel is that this cyclical downward bias that we've seen has certainly more than unwound what was perhaps a frothy environment. I think unquestionably a frothy environment in those metals with hindsight, and therefore, I feel on a medium to longer term basis, they're reasonable value in here at this stage. So I would rather be a buyer on easing than a seller on rallies at this stage of the cycle. Now, the commodity markets in general have been under pressure, and one of the reasons for that, of course, is the slower rate of global GDP growth and the change in emphasis within China in terms of how it's actually managing its economy. That has brought the continuous commodity index, which we often mention and illustrate, and that's been in an overall downward trending basis really for quite some time. And we had the actual peak in the first half of 2011, and near the highs, that continuous commodity index was up at nearly 700, 691, and it has come down subsequently to 500 on a couple of occasions. There's lateral support ranging along that 100 level, but we're only about 17 points higher than that. So we're 517 here right now. So this medium-term downward trend that began in 2011 is still intact, and we do not yet have clear evidence that this support at 500 is actually going to hold. But nevertheless, I think that the sector is becoming interesting, having pulled back a long way. Certainly, there are less there's less investment interest in the commodities here right now against this background of slower GDP growth. And also, we had the a rather predictably well, for some, predictably poor performance of those tracker funds in commodities. But certainly, as global GDP growth eventually picks up, and that still may be a year or two or three away, that I think when that does happen, that we will see some renewed strength in the overall commodity markets. And therefore, I'll repeat that I think this is probably little more than a cyclical bull mar bear trend in what I think is a longer term reasonably bullish in environment, but I don't expect to see any move back up towards the 700 level for quite some time, probably a few years overall. But there will be a number of opportunities within the commodity sectors, as is always the case. What tends to appeal the most to us at Fuller Money more often than not is when we see something that's really been battered down. Usually it's due to overproduction. I think some of we could apply that to the industrial metals here right now, and I suspect that they're in a medium-term support building phase, but I think it's too soon to be establishing much in the way of long positions right now. You tend to get quicker turns in some of the agricultural commodities, and two that I have mentioned earlier this week is have a look at the sugar market, and also have a look at the cotton market. Sugar had been an underperformer for quite a long time and is currently beginning what I think could be a reasonably decent recovery, and cotton looks like it's in a sort of a lengthy base development process overall. And there'll be more that are looking somewhat interesting. I would be very wary of commodities that have already run up quite a long way. There aren't too many of those, but it's far safer in this market to find something that has had a long period of underperformance and is then beginning to pick up as supply reduces and/or demand increases. That's the usual equation. When you get very low prices, we get less actual production, and we get increased consumption. And just the opposite happens when we get very high prices, less consumption and more production. Okay. What else to mention in this area? One of the good news stories, and this is really quite important, helping to keep inflation pressures low, is food prices. And those staple grains, we've been seeing this for a while now, but I had fretted during the crop cycle here in the western regions of the globe, partly because we'd had so many bad years. It was biblical proportions. We had 7 bad years of crops, and fortunately, we saw the South American crop season come to a reasonably successful conclusion, and that's also happening in the West for the most part. The staple grains, which are so important, have come back. They're way off their highs that they had seen a couple of years ago, and that, as I say, is going to help keep that food inflation in check, and hopefully that will remain the case for a reasonably lengthy period here overall. But weather will be the biggest factor in that, as is always the case. Now, what else to mention? I should talk a little bit about these currency markets. I think that, take the U.S. dollar first, and it's a little bit firmer here today, but it's been soft, been dragged down a little bit by sentiment over the partial government shutdown. My feeling is that on a long-term basis, is that the U.S. dollar is in a base-building phase. These often take several years before you get a significant recovery. I don't expect a significant recovery in the U.S. dollar anytime soon. I'm talking about overall, you know, if you look at it against the majority of other currencies. But I do think that as global GDP growth does improve, that we will see a longer-term bullish phase for the U.S. for the U.S. dollar. Now, the Federal Reserve is obviously not going to want the dollar to push ahead too strongly, and they will attempt to keep that in check. And we get a lot of management of currencies, as you know, by central banks, and for the most part, we see ranging activity overall. But the fundamentals that I think will really underpin the U.S. dollar and push it somewhat higher, particularly when global GDP growth is stronger, will be, first, the most important one is the USA's energy advantage, which is very considerable, thanks to fracking. And that's going to work in the U.S.'s favor and the U.S. dollar's favor for quite some time, I feel. Other countries have the potential to develop their shale oil and gas reserves, or at least a good number of countries have the potential to actually do that, but they've been slow to develop this. Now, that's one factor that will, I think, support the dollar and also help to support the U.S. stock market. Another one is, which you will certainly be familiar with, is the accelerated rate of technological innovation. And that is a field where the U.S. has a lead. It's always had a lead during our lifetime, although other countries have made big inroads on that lead from time to time. Japan did, certainly did, and parts of some of the other reasonably developed Asian countries have as well. And we saw the U.S. Really towards the latter part of the last century, we saw it lose some of that advantage, but it has certainly picked up over the last few years, and I think that's a trend that I can see continuing, and I think we will get more of a concentration of manufacturing in the U.S. over the next decade or so because of the cheaper energy overall. And the U.S. also has more multinational companies, the autonomies, and they are very much at the forefront of technology advances, either in helping to produce them or certainly in utilizing them. And that's a trend that I expect to continue. So those are the three main factors, in my opinion, which will lead to a somewhat stronger U.S. dollar over the longer term. And it'll also be good for the U.S. stock market overall, and I think also the global economy overall. The Japanese yen, I think, is also interesting in that it's been range-bound against the U.S. dollar now for the last few months. But I think that Japan would like to encourage a bit of additional yen weakness. And I think they may well do that. It became a little bit of a political issue, both inside Japan and outside Japan. But I think that's something that we are likely to see over the next few years, in all probability, somewhat easier Japanese yen. The euro, I've mentioned this in a short-term context, saying that as the U.S. ends this temporary shutdown, government shutdown, and gets beyond the debt ceiling. And that's going to happen fairly quickly, before the 17th of this month, and I do expect that to happen. Then we could see a bit of an unwind of the euro's strength. I've been mentioning that this week. The euro's down a little lower here today, 61 ticks. It's brought it back to 135.58. But I think while I would be very surprised if from 35.58, I would be very surprised if we got up above 140 for the euro against the US dollar, but I wouldn't be at all surprised to see it back at 130 or a little bit lower a few months from now. And the ECB will not want the euro to be much stronger in this environment overall. Sterling, Sterling has had a reasonably good run, but it's also susceptible to some weakness. So I think we've peaked up near, what was it, that 162, 163 area. I think that's certainly a short-term top, and that we will see Sterling move a little bit lower. It's down in here today somewhat, and it's broken what had been a pretty consistent, somewhat modest rally. We don't get the big percentage swings in the currencies very often, but I think it's on its way back down now, probably to the mid-150s region overall. And we saw those big setbacks in some of the Asian currencies, triggered initially, I think, by the Japanese devaluation, and then also by the reactions after some of the ASEAN markets, well, all of the ASEAN markets became very overextended, stock markets became very overextended on the upside, and fell back quite sharply. We had a move away from that region. It caused their currencies to come down quite sharply. But they are they have steadied up more recently, and I think that we'll see a bit more stability in that region. So I think that covers most of the points here, and so I will just say all the very best to all of you.